Chapter 10. The Root Canals of Hortense Bowden. Clara and Alsana were not very happy about their children spending so much time at the Chalfans. Alsana was now sure that it was their house that Milat went to when he stayed away from home for long periods after arguing with his father. And Clara only saw Irie one or two nights a week. For months it had been the Chalfans this and the Chalfans that. Joyce said this wonderful thing, and Marcus said something really clever. But Clara did not like to make trouble, and she had always wanted what was best for Irie. Archie only saw his daughter for minutes at a time, when she came home to shower, dress or eat, and he did not seem to be worried. But Alsana was angry and frustrated. In the end, she sent Niece of Shame round to the Chalfin's house with Irie and asked her to report back. And, after spending an evening having dinner with the Chalfin's, Nina came home and, for the first time, had to agree with her aunt. "They're crazy," she said, "all of them. Joyce asked if it was difficult for Muslim women to cook when they are wearing those long black sheets. Doesn't the arm get covered in food?" "Yes, crazy, fruitcakes, mad like a box of frogs." But no one knew what to do with this information. Irie and Milat were now 16 and never got tired of reminding their parents that they could now do what they liked. The law said so. Alsana and Clara could not lock their children in. If anything, it got worse. Irie spent more and more time learning about Chalfanism and seemed embarrassed by the way her father and mother spoke. Milat went away for weeks and came back with money that was not his. His voice moved wildly from the intellectual Chalfans to the street talk of the Kevin gang. It made Samad very angry because Milat was not one definite thing. He was not a Muslim or an Englishman or a Bengali. He lived in between. "If Majid was here, he would stop you two arguing," Alsana shouted one evening. "He has a lawyer's mind." But Majid was not here. He was there, and there was still not enough money to change the situation. Then the summer came, and with it, exams. Irie came second in science after Joshua, and Milat's grades were much better than anyone had expected. Alsana just said, "Iqbal brains. In the end, they win." But Clara knew it was because of the Chalfans, and she finally decided to visit them to say thank you. Joyce began by showing her the house. "And that's Dr. Solomon Chalfin, Marcus's grandfather," she said, stopping at a photograph in the hall. "He was listening to Freud when everyone in Vienna thought that Freud was crazy. The first time Marcus showed me that picture, I knew that I wanted to marry him. I thought, if my Marcus looks like that at 80, I'll be a very lucky girl." Clara smiled as Irie stood silently behind her. "It's a big family," Joyce continued. "And Clara, is it all right to call you Clara?" Clara nodded. "Clara's fine, Mrs. Chalfin." Irie waited for Joyce to ask Clara to call her Joyce. "Well, as I was saying, it's a big family and I like to think of Irie as part of it. She's such a special girl. We've really enjoyed having her around." "She owes you a lot," replied Clara. "We all do." "Oh, no, no, no," said Joyce. "I think as intellectuals that it's our responsibility. Anyway, it's been a joy, and I'm so pleased we have finally met, Clara. So, which side do you think Irie gets her brains from, the Jamaican or the English?" Clara looked at the long row of photographs, all of white men, some with glasses, some in uniform. They all reminded her of her own grandfather, Captain Charlie Durham, in the one photograph that Hortense had of him. The Bowden family called him Whitey. "That fool boy thought he owned everything he touched," they said about him. My side, said Clara carefully. I guess the English on my side. My grandfather was a rich Englishman. His child, my mother, was born during the Kingston earthquake in 1907. He taught my grandmother all she knew, a good English education. I can't think who else it could be. Oh, how interesting, replied Joyce. I always say to Marcus that it's the genes. He says it's too simple, but I'm proved right every time. As the front door closed behind her, Clara bit her lip with frustration and anger. Why had she said Captain Charlie Durham? That was a lie, as false as her own white teeth. Clara was cleverer than Durham. Probably Grandma Ambrosia was cleverer than Captain Charlie Durham. Durham was not clever. He killed 1,000 people to save one woman he did not really know. Clara's grandmother, Ambrosia, knew what could happen when an Englishman decides you need an education. It was bad enough that Captain Charlie Durham, who had just arrived in Jamaica, got his landlady's daughter, Ambrosia, pregnant in May 1906. He also wanted to teach her something as well. He wants to teach me, said Ambrosia to her mother. She put her hand over her stomach and tried to look as innocent as possible. Why does he want to teach me? 3 times a week, replied her mother. And don't ask me why, but God knows you need some educating. You don't ask why when a handsome gentleman like Mr. Durham wants to help you. So Ambrosia Bowden, with Hortense inside her, ran to the captain's room and returned there 3 times a week for lessons. She learned letters, numbers, the Bible, English history, and maths. And when her mother was out of the house, she also learned about the human body, which was a longer lesson and usually made her laugh. Captain Durham told her that their secret child would be the cleverest black boy in Jamaica. The months passed and Ambrosia began to change. Her education lifted her and she felt like she was better than others. Then, when Ambrosia was 5 months pregnant, Captain Durham left. Don't ask me why, said Ambrosia's mother, looking at her daughter's stomach. He just got up and went. But he left a message that you must be looked after by the church. He wants you to go see Mrs. Brenton. Mrs. Brenton was an angry Scottish woman who liked to say truth instead of church. We are going to the truth, she said when Sunday came. You and I and the little innocent, she said, patting Ambrosia's stomach, are going to hear the words of Jehovah. For it was Mrs. Brenton who introduced the Bowdens to the Jehovah's Witnesses and the Watchtower, and Hortense always believed that the moment her mother started believing, she started believing too. Then came the great earthquake of the 14th of January 1907. Ambrosia stood in church and prayed for the return of Charlie Durham when the world began to shake and Ambrosia started to have her baby. Then the walls began to fall. The glass blew in and Ambrosia fell down. Everybody was screaming and no one heard her. One day later, Durham returned. The island was destroyed and 2,000 were dead. Many thousands of others had lost their homes and there were huge fires in the hills. But he did not care. He only cared about Ambrosia. Only now did he realise how much he loved her. It was the Americans, not the British, who sent ships from Cuba to help the thousands who had lost their homes and had no food. The British were embarrassed about this, and so was Charlie Durham, who now knew where Ambrosia was. It did not look good that America was more prepared than England to help, so when he saw 2 American soldiers getting off their ships, he was not happy, because he still thought of Jamaica as his, to help or to hurt even. So he went to King's house and asked the governor of Jamaica if he could take a black girl home with him, an educated black girl who he wanted to marry. But the governor told him there was no space on the English ships for black women or animals. Durham was angry and reminded him that he had very little power. The arriving American ships proved that. Then he told him about the two American soldiers he had seen. "Is this not still our country?" he asked. The rest is history. The governor ordered the American boats to return to Cuba, and 1,000 people died in the fires and from hunger. Yes, a little English education can be a dangerous thing.